Rising Shout Podcast, episode 390. We're in like this ninth season, right? So this is our ninth year doing
this. Is that what this is? Nine seasons?
Yeah.
Jeez.
I think so. I'm not even doing intros anymore. Why do I do intros? Last week, I listened to the one without an intro because I was so concussed I couldn't do one. And
I remember that. Do you even remember that?
No, not really. But I re-listened to it.
Should we not make concussion jokes?
We can make concussion jokes. I just had a concussion.
I couldn't remember if we were going to make a joke about them or not.
No, boy. Not those jokes, because that was terrible. But I don't think it needs an intro, right? Like, what are we going to talk about today? BYU football. Okay. Let's roll.
Hey, guess what,
right?
Everybody? We're going to talk about BYU sports.
Yeah. Shocker. Shocker on the Rise and Shout podcast.
9 years of podcasts are the segue we need to get started.
Correct. So, Matt, let's start talking about concussions because Jeff Johnston is curious. That's at GoffJBYU. He says, "Yo, boys, how exactly did Adam concuss himself at a water park? Technically, the wall concussed me, not myself. Also, how's the recovery coming along?" So we were at the end of a water slide. I was on it with a friend and one of my daughters, and we got to the bottom, and it was one of those tube ones, you know, like you get into as a group. And when we got to the pool at the bottom, we spun, and I hit the side of the pool with my head. It had, like, big walls, right? You know what I mean? You have any idea what I'm talking about?
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I get it.
So, anyway, the recovery is coming along nicely. I'm not 100% yet, but the last couple days have been way better. Friday, I took off from work after working all week with a concussion, and I just, like, crashed all day. So, but it's felt much better. So, thank you, Jeff, for asking. That was very nice of you.
That was very nice of you. Your superficial question, Jeff.
It wasn't superficial. He said, "Yo, boys," with a Z.
Yo, boys.
So,
Geoff.
Right. Let's go to the.
I love Geoff. Actually, Geoff's been listening for years.
Maybe his ninth year. At least his eighth. It's been a long time.
Yeah, Geoff's old school. He's been through some things with us. That's why he's concerned about your welfare.
That's true. Let's jump into the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
Or climb.
Oh, what was that?
Why did your voice just crack?
What just happened?
Puberty hits a tough time, bro.
It's time to change.
Yeah.
All right.
Back.
What's the sound? I don't remember the sound. Maybe I'm concussed. Tweetback. I don't even know what it is anymore.
What you doing? Tweetback. That's not it. Tweetback.
Tweetback. I got
bag.
The hot rock bottom.
Hot rock bottom.
We have come off the rails. I am totally off the rails at this
point.
I'm all hopped up on the Mountain Dew, Pops.
All right, here we go. First one from Justin Sweeney.
Sweeney.
That's at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter. And you can, of course, tweet at us at BYU_RightShot. Says, "Are you getting the new Disney streaming service? I bet my mortgage the answer is yes." Yeah, that would be a good bet, I think, at least for me. If so, what price could they charge per month until you got rid of it? So, Matt, Disney Plus is starting here in a couple weeks. You gonna have it?
I haven't signed up yet, but I have a funny feeling it's coming my way. I mean, it's Disney and sports. It's like the nexus of everything that comes through my television.
Well,
as a father of four children.
You don't have to get ESPN Plus. You can just
do
Disney.
Why else would you sign up for this? Why else would you sign up for this?
The Marvel Cinematic Universe. The Mandalorian Star Wars television show. All of the MCU TV shows. There's going to be Winter Soldier and Falcon. A show.
I'm telling you, I told you, I'm probably signing up for this.
I'm
and they could probably charge me up until whatever I was paying for DirecTV when I cut the cord.
The question really for me is, I'd pay $15 a month, $20 a month maybe. Is that insane? But here's the thing. The real question for me is what I'm going to do with Netflix.
I mean,
I don't really watch that much Netflix. Most of the shows I'm watching right now are on Hulu or Amazon Prime Video. So I'm not exactly like, besides Stranger Things, I think I could live without Netflix. So do I have Hulu and Netflix and Disney Plus? That seems like too much.
It seems like you have all of the things. You have all of the services at that point.
But I'm doing Hulu live TV, right? So like I'm getting all the Hulu content, but I'm really paying them for the live TV. I didn't sign up to get the Hulu content, but I have liked the Hulu content. I mean, I'm going working my way through Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It's a
Brooklyn
fantastic
Nine-Nine's a
show.
great show.
So
Great show.
we'll definitely be watching it. Now, random question alert. You ready for a random question? Or maybe it's not even a
Yeah.
question. Justin Whiting at JN Whiting says Red Sox,
What?
White Sox, Reds, Nets, hashtag sports equipment team names. Is that a question?
That's from a comment. Wow, you were concussed. I made a comment about this last week.
What did you say?
We said something about the Brooklyn Nets and Kyrie Irving and how he was like he apologized for being such a weenie in Boston and how he was glad to be home or something. I said, what team is named after a piece of equipment? So stupid.
Okay.
So I think we might have come up with Red Sox last week. I don't remember, but so you got Red Sox, White Sox, and the Nets. I'm not what Reds. I don't understand it.
They come
If
from
the
the
Reds
Red
are a
Stockings. The name Reds originally comes from the Red Stockings.
So what are the Browns?
They're named after the last name of the team that the guy that owned them, Paul
Is
Brown.
that actually is that real?
I think so.
That's actually where they got the name from?
I think so. Where
So
does
we could
the
be the New England
NFL
Crafts.
Browns name? Let's see here what the Google machine says. History of the Cleveland Browns. Very quickly, this doesn't seem to be working. I don't know.
What's the Reds? So it's from the Red
No, well.
Stockings. So it's like the Red Sox. They just couldn't name it the Red Sox because that was taken.
The Reds and the Red
Very
Sox,
weird.
yeah, it's a weird deal. They began in 1944. Actually, they were owned by Arthur B. McBride. But Paul Brown was the coach, right?
I don't know.
Namesake, team's namesake and first coach, Paul Brown. I was right. They're named after
That
Paul
is
Brown.
so bizarre.
I don't know.
We're the Fighting Belichicks.
Well, they might change the Patriots after this. I don't
They
know.
probably should.
All right,
And you know
next.
what? Actually, they need to do with the Patriots is change the logo back. They bought into that, whatever that 1997 or whatever, whenever it is they changed the logo. It was earlier than that. If you go back and look at that year, Nike changed a bunch of teams' logos to this like triangular moving shape thing, and they just rebranded it. The Panthers, Purdue bought it. BYU bought a version of it that wasn't a triangle.
But we didn't use it
The
on our
Patriots,
helmets. BYU didn't use
there's a
it on their
bunch of college
helmets.
teams. You go, right, but Nike sold that stupid shape to everybody. You look at the Panthers logo, the old Panthers logo, the first like back at that time,
Yep,
and the
Patriots.
Patriots current logo. It's the same logo. It's just colored. It's
Yeah,
just
but now
like
it's
it's just
classic,
fill in the blank.
even though it's
It's
stupid.
lame. It's not classic.
The hiking Patriots way cooler.
I'd even go with an even some. It doesn't have to be the Hiking Patriot. Just update it. Everybody else that bought that logo from Nike has changed it.
Has left it behind. Yeah, that's
Yep.
true. That's factual. Next question, Chris Gregory on Twitter at Balanced Digital says, can BYU still call this season progress over last year by winning out, or has that ship sailed with the South Florida loss? Matt, can 2019 be a successful season, whatever that means, right? I guess that's what we're going to find here, if we win out.
Well, no, I think he's asking, is it progress? There's a difference between it being a
Oh,
successful season and did we
you're
show
right.
progress? And guess what, folks? No. It's the same story. You beat a couple, you have got a big marquee win, you lost to some teams that you should never have lost to. It's basically the same story.
I don't think it's the same story.
I'm not going to say progress.
Okay, so you went out. How many games are left? Five, right? Five games left. You win at least one more game than you won the year before, okay? And last year we had the big win against Wisconsin. What other great win is there on that schedule?
Okay, I see where you're going here.
If we beat Utah State, San Diego State, USC, and Boise State, that's four quality wins. Last year we had how many quality wins? One? Maybe two if you count Arizona?
Well, and if you were to win out at this point, I will say that you beat Boise State and Utah State, which has been a struggle.
So I'm gonna say if we win out, it's progress. I'm not certain it's like massive progress. But I mean, we beat the Boise State win and the USC win. He has not had two wins in a season like that. Satake has not. I mean, we have two wins versus the top 40, according to Football Outsiders. And yes, we also have a loss to the bottom 30 with South Florida. So, you know, like we said last week, you know, it's a weird year. But, you know, I think it's progress. But I could see an argument contrary to that. But if you win out, you're going to win more games, at least one more game than last year, possibly two, depending on what crappy team you would beat in the Hawaii Bowl. So, all right. Our brother Don says, who would you start at QB this week and why? And also thoughts on the World Series. Would you like to answer this first, or Zach Thornton also answered this?
I think we kind of talked about this, but let's go ahead and let Zach Thornton chime in.
We talked about this last week, too?
Yes, we did.
Huh. Weird. I was very tired that night.
I'm a little concerned.
You should be concerned. This was not a good week for me.
I'd like to introduce myself. I'm your brother, Matt. Yeah. I don't know. I believe we've met.
I think I'm going to... Yes, I do remember this. We both said you stick with the hot hand, right?
You have to go with the hot hand.
Got to go with Romney. But here's what I'm going to say. As the coaching staff, I think the decision is probably more complex than that. I think you have to start whoever you think gives you the best chance to beat Utah State on Saturday night. I know that's like cliche, and what does that really mean? But I don't think you can just default to the fact that Romney was the quarterback when you beat Boise State.
No, I think you default to the fact that the offense looked put together. Right, like you have a rhythm now.
Was the offense any better than USC? I don't think so. I mean, different. You don't have the option of that quarterback, right?
And you don't have that running back anymore either.
Fair. I would probably stick with Romney. He's made almost no mistakes. Right? I don't know, like we said last week, I don't know where this guy came from and why he's playing well, and he played well against a very tough defense last week. Utah State is another really tough defense. Maybe not as good as Boise's, but top 40. Good news is, their offense is terrible. Exhibit B, Air Force. I watched that game. Utah State's offense isn't any good. They're not good.
Oh my gosh.
Did you watch any of that game? Yeah. They were inept. And Air Force defense isn't terrible or anything. They're a good team. But Utah State is not very good, right? They have close losses against good teams. That's their like claim to fame this season. But they haven't beat anybody good yet. And now that Boise State's motivated, and assuming they can get a quarterback to play consistently, they're going to crush Utah State. Don't you think? I think they're going to crush them. But Air Force was dominant. Now, we can't replicate what Air Force did to them on offense, right? We're not going to go out there and run the option all of a sudden. Which, by the way, is kind of funny to me. Everybody worries about a running quarterback getting hurt. Air Force doesn't go through tons of quarterbacks.
I don't know. I think you get the right personnel in there.
Okay.
And it's a little bit different than, and he's not like out open field tackles all the time, which is how Taysom got hurt both times.
Okay, Taysom got hurt in weird, freaky place. So I don't know that Taysom's a good example, because that one on in the open field, I don't even know still to this day what happened and why that was a big injury, right? It was weird. But look at all the running quarterbacks that exist in the college game right now. A lot of them
Yeah.
go through a whole season healthy. And our quarterbacks that have been hurt recently, Jaren Hall did not get hurt on a running play. Zach Wilson got hurt not on a running play, but on tackling after an interception. So if Jaren Hall comes back, he better be a freaking running quarterback if he's healthy. Because otherwise, it's the same thing I said about Taysom at the beginning of that year when they didn't unleash him. You have taken away what one of the reasons that they're the starter versus the guy behind him. If Hall comes in, we got to run him, right?
Yeah, I think you do. I
You
think
got
you
to
do.
run him. You got to run him. All right, I'm way off topic here. Thoughts on the World Series, Matt? I'm assuming you don't want to talk about this after three straight losses.
Nats in seven.
Nats in seven. All right. I think Strasburg is dominant in game six, and I think it's going to go to game seven. How's that? And the Nats win if Scherzer can pitch game seven. Have they said anything today? Whether that's a possibility? I didn't read anything today. It doesn't matter. It doesn't
Yeah,
matter.
I don't know.
Zach Thornton says you got to do Hall as your starting quarterback. And then you have Baylor there if Hall isn't doing well, and Astros in six. So it's kind of tough. We were sitting there watching the game the other night, and my oldest daughter said, "Well, who do we want to win?" And I said, "Well, I want the Nats to win. Astros won 2 years ago. Got a bunch of relatives that love the Nats." And she said, "Well, don't we have some relatives that love the Astros?" And I said, "Yeah, but it's the Astros, right? Who cares? Sorry, Don, and all those people in Houston."
Well, I'll tell you though, if the Astros aren't playing the Red Sox or the Nats,
You're rooting for the
you know what I
Shows.
mean? Like,
Yeah.
sure,
I'm not.
it's a
I don't care.
hometown team,
Yeah, you've lived in
and I've
Houston
got
for a
kids,
while.
and my younger kids are Astros fans. Like, we were watching the game the other night, and my 8-year-old says to me, "Hey, Dad, is it cool that I'm an Astros fan?" I'm
And
sitting
you
there with my
said,
Nats hat.
"Hell, heck no."
Wow. No, I said you should be a fan of your hometown team, and this is where you're growing up. Like, so you should be an Astros fan.
You're a bigger man than
That's
I.
fine.
Or I guess the answer is I just can never live in New York.
Well, yeah, I would make an exception to that rule because he and I have already had that conversation because his little league team is the Yankees.
Yeah, you can't be a Yankees fan.
Yeah, but that was hard for him, like during the ALCS, right? Because he had a game the night of one of the Astros Yankees games, and he and his friends, they like to wear their jersey on their game day to school, right? Because that's what kids do. So he shows up to school one day, everybody's wearing Astros stuff, and he and a couple of his buddies are in their Yankees jerseys, and people are like, "Oh, you Yankees." And he's like, "No, it's my team. We have a game tonight." It's very awkward. That's hard. In the 8-year-old social scene, that's a big deal.
Yeah, I just wouldn't have worn the jersey. But
It's a tough decision you
it's
got
a
to
tough
make when you're that
decision
age.
when you're eight. Easy for me to say. Gary Payne's got a question for us. That's at FastBreakGP on Twitter. What play could we run or not run for Utah State that would cause Adam to have a frothy fit? #TweetBag, #PainBag. I do remember using the phrase frothy fit. I think we
You
can.
used it multiple
I
times. You
think
used it
we can.
multiple
I
times.
think we can thank the concussion for that.
And it's gross.
So, what would get me fired up? I don't know. You get more fired up about the play calls than I do. Like, you hate the jet sweep with a passion.
I don't hate the jet sweep. I just like gaining yards.
So, I was looking at. I don't have access to these stats this year, but I was looking at last year's stats. And our jet sweep did okay, like 4.5 yards per carry last year. Do you know how many draws we ran last year?
Oh my gosh. I don't.
Two. Grimes' offense is bizarre. Like, the mix of plays is bizarre to me. And the kind of absolute devoid of some very basic football plays that I think help relieve pressure on your quarterback, like screens and draws, things like that, is bizarre to me. I get it. There's a lot of offenses that don't use either of those plays, but I think BYU should be using both of those plays, and we don't. Very rarely, since Grimes took over, do we use draws or screens. QB draw is probably the most likely, especially if Hall's playing. But I don't know. What would get me? I'll tell you what's going to get me a frothy fit. Okay, now I know.
Tonga, here it comes.
Tonga not being in on a key short yardage situation.
But Adam, they got to keep fresh legs.
That's stupid.
You don't think fresh legs is important?
I'll take Tonga at 60% over anybody else. Anybody else we got. Do you know, of course you don't, and I'm setting you up. I'm sorry. I do this all the time.
You do it constantly. It's great.
What is our defensive line ranked according to Football Outsiders?
43rd.
103rd.
Right.
And our offensive line is also ranked outside of the top 100. Grimes and Satake have repeatedly said we'll own the line of scrimmage. We have not. So you keep freaking Tonga on the field, please. Tuihaki, keep him on the freaking field, okay? Especially in key situations. That is not when we sub out our best defensive player. Do you take Gunwalaku out on key defensive plays?
Fresh legs.
No, you don't. Fresh legs. It's stupid. Stupid. We don't have the depth to do that.
Fresh legs.
Alabama does that because they got three other four or five star guys.
Because their backups are going to get picked in the late round. Okay.
Right.
Like it's not the same thing.
No, it's not the same thing. All right. Preston Paris. That's at Paris_Preston said, would you rather see BYU score 40 plus against Utah State, but only win by 7, say like 48-41, or put your shutout and only score twice, like 14-0. Offense has a great day and the defensive struggles, or vice versa. Matt, which type of win would you prefer against the Aggies?
I'll take the pitch a shutout, but only score twice.
Really? You always complain to me on with texting about how boring low scoring games are. So
I don't think that's true. I don't think I'd do that.
You think
I'd do that?
You do. Like, this game is boring, I'm falling asleep.
Oh well.
That's what you said in the first half against Boise State. That you were falling asleep.
The game was boring. And I was falling asleep.
I think I don't care, to be honest. And Jeff Johnston then responded to Preston saying, I would love to see a shootout, right? Love to see some high-scoring game. And there would be something cool about that only because we haven't done that much, right, in a long time. So that would be kind of cool. But the other part about this, these two teams are not built for that kind of game. So we're talking about two offenses that are outside of the top 75. So I don't think we're going to see a high-scoring game. I don't think we're going to see a high-scoring game. So, Matt, it's time for us to venture into rumor territory.
Rumorville.
Yeah, Chase Blyle has one for us. He emailed us. You can, of course, email at risingshoutpod@gmail.com. He's got a juicy one, he says, for us, all right? He heard,
I know you like him juicy.
Oh, that's just weird. Can you just not say stuff like that? I heard that Tuliaki and Grimes are both going to be fired at the end of the year, Chase says, and have been relieved of play-calling responsibilities. Apparently, Roderick was calling the offense against Boise State, which is why Grimes was on the field. We'll get back to that fact there in a second. Satake apparently was calling the defense for Tuiaki. I also heard that Satake will likely be extended for another 2 years, if for nothing more than being that there are no other active LDS coaches interested in the BYU job. It's a rumor, but it might explain the better performance and definitely could explain why Grimes wasn't in the booth. Matt, I don't believe that either of these things are true.
I believe that they made some changes in terms of who was, in terms of how they game planned.
Oh, now, for sure.
Do I believe that they outright that Grimes was on the sideline because he wasn't making the play calls? I'm not sure I'm there. I would like to believe that Satake was running the defense just because I'd like to see how that goes. But this is very specific information, right? So yes. it's difficult to, we talk about the Satake stuff separately. But as far as the coordinators go, like clearly they were doing something different. Now, did that mean that they opened up the playbook a little bit, or they opened up, or Grimes and Tuiaki were forced to take some feedback from some other people on the staff? Maybe decisions in certain situations were given to other people on the staff to make. Maybe they changed the way they route it. Like sometimes the head coach has got to kind of sign off on a play, or one of the other coaches will say, maybe we should run versus pass here. And then a play is called. Like, do I think they made some adjustment in that type of space? They absolutely did. Now, but I don't know that I'm there to say they took play calling responsibilities from both coordinators away wholesale on the same week. That seems a little tough to me.
Well, I just don't understand how something like this doesn't get reported if it happens, right? Somebody in the program is going to be ticked and talk to a reporter, right? I mean, somebody's going to say, if you're going to fire Grimes and Tuiaki anyway, and they know that, why aren't you just going to then turn to call a reporter and say, hey, you can't put my name in here, or somebody that's loyal to Grimes or Tuiaki on the staff, and say, hey, this is what went down. Now, I think
these guys are getting a raw deal. They're going to,
and I think that what happened
responsibilities away, and they know they're going to fire him, right?
Yeah, yeah. And the other part is, I don't know. I know that it's happened, and I don't know if it's happened at BYU, but the coaches have been pre-fired, right? There's been an agreement in place with assistants or head coaches to, hey, we're going to fire you, but they had a good working relationship and could pull something like that off. If you're Grimes and they've already fired you, wouldn't you just kind of force their hand and make them let you go?
So I'd be out. It's like the thing we talked about the other day, right? Like this situation, if you're Grimes and they've told you they're going to fire you, this situation you can't improve your situation by sticking around. Especially if they take all the responsibility away from you, because then that's going to become clear at the end of the season when you start looking for other jobs. And so that way, like, it's a double whammy for you. If this offense continues to struggle, and you were making the play calls, like, that's going to make it that much harder for you to get a job. If the offense continues to struggle and you weren't making the play calls, nobody's going to believe that you weren't involved, right? Like, and then if the offense does well, everyone's going to pin the success on somebody else. So you can't improve this situation for you if you're Grimes and you know they're going to fire you. I think you have to walk.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I don't know.
I don't think they've pre-fired him.
I think
people may feel like the writing's on the wall. Maybe they're making some real serious adjustments with how they're running meetings and who's making decisions. But maybe the writing is on the wall. But I don't think anybody has consciously made the 100% decision that these guys are fired.
Yeah, yeah. Now, not in the tweet bag, but I thought it would come up, so I'm just going to throw it out there. Jay Drew wrote an article this week saying with the headline, is this the deepest and most talented collection of quarterbacks in BYU football history? With all due respect to Jay Drew, I've got a very strong opinion on that. Matt, if we've now had three different quarterbacks play, all at a reasonably decent level. Notice my qualifications there. Thoughts on this being the deepest and most talented collection of quarterbacks in BYU football history?
I think that's a little bit of hyperbole. I mean, at the end of the day, what we do have is it looks like we have three quarterbacks who are all pretty much playing at the same level. That's what it looks like. But the Jaren Hall sample size is very small, and so is the Romney sample size. But it looks like the gap between one and three might not be huge. But to say that these guys are all playing at the level of I'd even say, and I know you're going to probably pull up a bunch of statistics, But you look at, you know, are these guys playing at the level of like a Max Hall or John Beck?
But that's not the question. The question isn't, are any of them as good as the best quarterbacks who've ever played? The question is, have we had three guys this capable on the roster at the same time?
I think it goes to like depth, because I believe the question, you know, the idea was is as good and as deep. Maybe not as deep, but definitely as good.
Oh, we've had the answer to this is very easy. At one time, we had Steve Young, Mark Wilson, and Jim McMahon on the same freaking roster. So the answer
is
three
very successful NFL quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, it's and all very good in college, right? And you know, didn't Beck and Hall overlap one season? So you had both of them on the roster at one time, or am I wrong?
Sure, let's just say that's true. Let's just say it's true.
The answer is no. And the other thing is, to your point about just Hall and Beck, I don't know if any of these guys are great. Right? I don't. I have no idea if any of these guys are great. I think Wilson has shown some flashes that make me think he could be great. Right?
But I'll tell you what's interesting here is even in Jay's article, if you go back to 2012 where you've got Riley Nelson, Taysom Hill, and James Lark on there, that group right there is as deep and as talented as the three we have today as far as I've seen.
I don't know if Lark's as good as any of these guys, but
Lark was very serviceable.
Against the crappy part of our schedule, yes. Very impressive.
Yeah, I'll give you that. But I also, like, I'm not all, like, I know I said we've got these three guys that are basically the same, but the sample size on Hall and Romney, well, Romney's a little bit better because you got a full game against a real opponent. It was very small. Right?
Yes.
So, and I know what I have with James Lark. I know this is a guy who can manage a game against a mediocre opponent.
With a totally different offensive coordinator than we have. I'm just telling you right now, you put any of these three guys in to a Robert and I offense, and they outperform Lark. I mean, Lark couldn't throw the ball long. Romney can't. Lark had trouble going through his progressions. All these three guys have been able to go through progressions. So Lark was fine in that situation. But to your point, Riley Nelson and Taysom Hill may be better than any of these three. I don't know the answer to that long term, right? Because it's easy to say that in retrospect. Nelson was quite good when he was healthy. I know some people still like to hate on him, but he was very good when he was healthy. I don't know if he was a great quarterback, but he was certainly above average quarterback. I don't know if any of these
guys...
The sad part
about Riley...
Go ahead.
I'm just saying the sad part about Riley Nelson is we didn't get as much healthy Riley Nelson as we could have hoped.
Yeah. And you look at this and you go, BYU has maybe had, let's say, 8 great quarterbacks. It depends on where you draw the line, right? In football history, the chances that one of them is on the roster right now is not very high. It just isn't, right? And it could be. Any of these three could turn out to be great. But you know, the chance that we have a Jim McMahon on this roster is not particularly high.
It's right? Pretty close to zero.
Well, it's not zero. I mean, somebody could emerge, right?
Jim McMahon level? Jim McMahon level?
Sure, why not?
At the time Jim McMahon was playing,
he was the best quarterback in football. Yeah.
He was the best college quarterback of all time.
Well, yeah. But I'm just saying that is possible. Right? None of these guys have played enough. And Wilson is playing as a sophomore. And McMahon got more time on the bench to learn, though he played young as well. I'm just saying. I'm not saying anybody is as good as McMahon. Relax over there, buddy. I'm just saying none of these guys are great yet. So it's really hard to call it the deepest and best group when you don't have a great one among the three. You know what I mean?
All right, I'll give you that.
There's no great one. All right, so Matt, a couple of things before we do the big why and talk about beating Utah State. One last week for you to get on patreon.com/riseandshout, support the podcast. One of our patrons will receive a free some free BYU gear next week. We will announce it live on the air. Not live, because we don't do the show live. But you get my point. Somebody who do that. So go to patreon.com/risingshot. The other thing is, I am doing another Kickstarter for my fantasy series, The Empire of the Peaks, to complete books 4 and 5 and finish the series. That will be launching before the next podcast. So it'll be on social media. I will send it out via the Risingshot social media outlets, if you will. All right. Let's see. The big why is beating Utah State is the key, Matt, I am going to argue, to a successful season. If you beat Utah State, I believe you can consider this year a success, with the big caveat that you have to, at minimum, win the next 3 games after that as well. Right? Against terrible opponents. But I would make the argument that this can still be a successful season if we beat Utah State and lose to San Diego State. Your turn.
If we beat Utah State and lose to San Diego State, is this a successful season?
Correct.
Yeah, I'll take that.
It is a successful season. A strange and weird one. Right? But you and I talked about 7 to 9 wins being the range of good. Right? 10 being great. And right. Anything less than 7, we said this at the beginning of the year, anything less than 7 is failure. Right?
Yep.
And if you right beat on. Utah State, all you have to do is beat 3 crappy teams to get to 7 wins. So this is the key. This is our big game for the year, the rest of the year. The San Diego State game will be big too, because they could be ranked at that point if they keep winning. And it could be a third victory against a ranked opponent. I don't even know what I'm talking about. That's insane. We lost to South Florida, and we beat USC and Boise State.
I don't even know what I'm looking at anymore.
And the whole narrative of, you know, Satake can't win at home, he can only win on the road, has been totally flipped. I don't even know what to talk about. All right, so let's look at the last 2 losses and what we can learn, Matt, from these 2 losses to Utah State. All right?
So get back
to DeLorean and go back to 2017.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Well, we shouldn't be going back here. But BYU loses 40-24 in a game where basically BYU outplayed Utah State. We held Utah State to 2.5 yards per rush. Tolu Tau and Squally ran all over the place. Every time they got the ball, it was 6-7 yards a pop. How did we lose, Matt? Do you remember? 7 freaking turnovers. 4 interceptions, and we lost. 3 fumbles fell out of our hands, and all 3 ended up with the Aggies. Now, to be fair, Utah State deserves credit for that. They were not all unforced errors. Some of them were. But 7 turnovers. You cannot win games when you turn the ball over 7 times. So I guess that's the lesson. Don't turn the ball over 7 times. Is that a lesson?
Yeah, but that's pretty basic.
Okay. Last year was not as good. 45-20. And I mean good, just, I mean, easy to explain. We averaged less than 6 yards per play, 3 turnovers, and we only rushed the ball 15 times. So I think the lesson, Matt, from last year's loss is we're going to have to establish the run, and just like the year before, we cannot turn the ball over against these guys because their defense is too good. We won't get enough scoring chances if we turn the ball over 3 times.
Well, and I think another thing that hurt us last year is 12 penalties.
12
penalties. We gave up over 100 yards in penalties. And for a team, as we talked about last week, that seems to struggle in the discipline space, I mean, you can't have that.
You cannot. You can, and especially when you're going to turn the ball over 3 times. So think about, you know, sacks. We also got sacked last year. How many times? 3 times? 4 times? So you had you add all that up, and that's 20 negative plays. Probably actually a couple more than that. You can't have that much, right? You can't have that many negative plays, and most of them are on forced errors, right? Most penalties are on forced errors.
I flipped the.
It was them that had 12 penalties?
On penalties. Oh. Yeah.
How many do we have?
And we still lost. 6.
Oh, well, that's not that bad. That's actually pretty average. But obviously the 3 turnovers were a big deal, and we only rushed the ball 15 times. We're gonna have to have a better mix than that. Now, granted, we got behind, right? There was some reason behind it, but they abandoned the run, and this year you're gonna have to go after it, because as Air Force showed last week, that may be the way you can get after these guys. Now we'll see. Matt, anything else? Well, Air Force just played solid run defense. I mean, they did some blitzing and some other things too, but I think the key to them just dominating was 7 guys in the box, and everybody stays and is solid with their assignment. There was nothing tricky about what they did. There was nothing gimmicky.
And then their offense did exactly what it's supposed to do, right? They rushed for 450 yards and held the ball for 45 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's a great way to play defense, is just keep Utah State off the field.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. No.
They put up 30 first downs. They were 10 of 13 on third down. Yeah. Right? Like,
if you can convert
10 of 13 third downs, I mean, right, you create a manageable situation. It's a product of the offense.
Yeah.
But
And to be fair also, right, Utah State ran what, like 30 something plays on offense because of that.
But you know what we were on third down against Utah State last year?
Not good.
1 of 9.
That's what Utah State was this last week against Air Force. They were 1 of 9.
Yeah. But we've got to convert third downs.
Got to convert them. Okay. So game time. We're going to do over under Utah State edition. You ready?
All right. Here we go.
All right. Let me get to my cheat sheet here. Because I'm good at this, Matt. I'm really good.
You are so awesome.
Yeah, I love how good I am. All right, here we go. Total yards for BYU will set it at 375, over under 375.
That was my number.
I'm that good? That's what I already
taking
told you.
The under.
I'm going to take the over. Total yards for Utah State. And I'm going to set it at 400 even.
I'm taking the under.
I'm also going to take the under. Turnovers for BYU. I'm going to set the line at 2.5.
I'm going over.
I'm going to go under. Turnovers for Utah State. I'm going to set the line at 1.5.
I'm taking the over there as well.
I'm taking the over as well. I have no idea what you're going to predict. So let's hear it, Matt. First, Utah State is favored by 3.5 at home, which basically means they think this is a pick 'em, you know, from a skill level perspective. So you take in the Aggies or the Cougars at that 3.5?
I'm taking the Cougs.
I am as well. So, Matt, final score?
So I think this game's going to be a little bit ugly, and the first half is going to be a snoozer. Things are going to wake up in the first half of the fourth quarter. We'll get a final score. BYU wins 24-21.
Gosh, that's the exact same score I have.
24-21. This is probably right.
24-21. I think BYU's defense plays well again, and I think the offense plays well enough. Now, are you going to be shocked if we lose to Utah State on Saturday night?
Not even a little bit.
You can't be in a year where you lost to Toledo and South Florida back.
Matter of fact, I wouldn't be any more shocked if I'm correct on my prediction or if we lose this game by 4 touchdowns. Like, I have no idea who we are.
I can say this.
This stuff has become impossible to predict.
I don't know why there wouldn't have been before. And I think I mentioned this last week, but it's hard for me to remember. There seemed to be, and you know how much I hate this kind of stuff usually, but there seemed to be a sense of urgency on both sides of the ball 2 weeks ago against Boise. People were flying to the ball on defense.
Yep.
The offense seemed to be locked in on their assignments. And if they're, I don't mean to be overly dramatic. If you can't do that against Utah State on Saturday night, then I feel like you just have the wrong coaches.
With a week off, and these coaches know you have to win this game, right? Like,
you got to win this game.
And we've talked about this. This record against Boise State and Utah State in Utah is a real problem.
It's a real problem. It's legit.
And so, if your coaches, right, and we've talked about this, right, is the reason that we do well against some of these teams and then struggle against others is that we're just putting more time and effort into preparing for these other games. I used to believe that was true until the Utah game this year. But but they've got a week off, and all of these coaches know that this if there is a do-or-die game, right, the Boise State and the Utah State games are it.
Well, and you can't. Right? You probably can't replicate keeping the ball for 45 minutes like Air Force did. But you can look at the film and say this week, hey, we're going to do the opposite of what we did against USC, where we put five guys in the box and dared them to run it. And USC refused to do it. Right? I thought it was a great game plan by Tuiaki. I'm not sure why he stuck with that game plan for the next several weeks. Right? But this needs to be the opposite, right? When you don't have just a dominating, if you're Alabama's defense, you don't have to worry about game planning for a specific team until you play Clemson, right? You just go out there and do your thing because you're a dominant unit. When you're not a dominant unit, and this defense clearly is not, then you've got to go out there and you've got to have the right plan. And that's true on offense as well, right? You know, when you were BYU in the 80s, you went out and just did your thing on offense, right? You didn't worry about what the defense was going to give you.
Right.
We are not the 1980s offense. I hate to break it to people. It might be a shock. The other thing is the last two games, we've been more run than we've been pass. And I think that's a lot because we've got inexperienced quarterbacks. I think that's got to be true again. I think you got a heavy dose of run in this, and you got to be patient and don't give up, because in the first quarter you have a couple of, you know, negative or you know, minimal run play games, right? You got to stick with it,
because you can live with that as long as the game is still close.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. And if you've got these two quarterbacks that seem to be remarkably not turnover prone, right? This is, you know, what did Coy Detmer have, like, he had like three of those four interceptions, right? After he came in. You remember that?
So weird.
Oh, that 2 years ago. That was a dumpster fire. I know people said that after South Florida, which that game was terrible. That seven turnovers against Utah State was just crazy. It was crazy town. Well, we both sound like we're being positive, but yet not. About Saturday
night. It's like we're positive, but we're disappointed about it.
Yeah,
it's a very weird feeling.
Or we're doubting our own positivity.
Because I have no idea what to expect.
I don't know.
This could be a close game. It could be a gap of four touchdowns, and I still don't know who won. I mean, there's been no rhyme or reason to this, and it's just which team is going to show up. And I understand part of what we've seen is injuries. I get it, right? Like, we had to change identities when Tyson got hurt, and then we've had to theoretically kind of change identities again when we went to our second and third string quarterback. But frankly, I think the move from second to third string quarterback was less about changing identities based on the injury as much as it was about just figuring out how to run the offense correctly. Like, losing Tyson, I think, was a much bigger blow, and we've had to make some adjustments around that. But overall, like, if what we saw at Boise State is that they finally figured out what the offensive identity looks like and how to set up a coherent, cohesive game plan, then yeah, I feel good about our chances here. But if that was just an aberration, we just got lucky, like, then this is going to be a long night.
Yeah, could be. Could be. So last thing, okay, we both said at the start of the show or midway through the show maybe, who we would start who do you think will start?
I think it'll be Romney.
I think it's going to be Hall. I think if he's healthy, they start him. I think this is a loyalty first coaching staff.
That's, which is, I don't know. Maybe that's good. I don't know. But at the end of the day, I mean, I know it's hard to take a guy out because he was out hurt, but
that's just
the nature of the beast.
Let me ask you a question.
This is how this works.
Did Nick Saban make a mistake by pulling Jalen Hurts for Tua back a year and a half ago? Was that a mistake?
At the time, it wasn't a mistake. But it kind of looks like one now.
No, it doesn't. Tua's a better quarterback than Hurts. Right?
Well, you can say that until Oklahoma beats him for a national championship.
Oklahoma just lost to Kansas State. They're not going to be in the college football playoffs. So,
whatever. Okay,
Alabama's going to be playing LSU in the college football playoffs. So,
right.
No. Oklahoma's
well, Tua was it was the right move. Tua was a better quarterback.
And this stupid Big 12 championship game is going to hurt them worse because then they're going to have another game they might lose that makes it even less likely for them to be in the Big 12 championship. You have to make the call as a coach, especially at the quarterback position, but this is true at every position. You have to play the best guy. This is not JV sports, right? And you don't that whole thing about you can't lose your job because of injury, that's just stupid, right? Somebody didn't lose their job because of injury. They lost their job because while they were injured, somebody played better, right? And they should get the job if they're playing better. Now, that's what the coaches have to decide, right? And it's really hard for us to do that. Like you said, there's a very small sample size here. Hall didn't even get to finish a game. Is that right?
Right, but that makes that makes him a question mark.
What do you mean?
Right, it makes it a question mark. You don't know what you have, right? But you know what you have with Romney, so you put him.
Do
in the
you
game.
One game? I don't know if you know what you have, right?
You know more about Romney than you do about Hall.
You know game, yes, but you don't. We don't see any of the practices, right? And yes, games are more important than practices. But you have to be careful not to have the recency bias of, well, we just beat Boise State, so don't mess with anything, right? You've got to make the best call. These are not easy decisions because it's not super straightforward. If Hall had looked terrible against South Florida, we didn't lose to South Florida because of Hall. We lost to South Florida because our defense was atrocious that game, right? So it's, you know, you can't like blame Hall for that one. He was playing pretty well. Now, the big argument is, well, Romney played a little bit better than Hall did against an actual football team, right? Like a top 40 program, as opposed to Hall played okay against a bottom 40 program. So again, I'd start Romney, but I'm not going to be shocked if Hall takes the first snap. Or if they do something crazy and play both of them, which that'll get you into a frothy fit. You love splitting quarterbacks. It's your favorite. You love it.
The dumbest thing in sports.
Let's give them three or four plays, and then in the middle of a successful drive, swap to the other guy. You love that. It's your favorite.
Yeah, because it's worked so many times in history, like zero.
Not zero. We've talked about this on the podcast. There is one exception to the rule, and it has been the doom of every running quarterback ever since. We'll put Tim Tebow in the red zone. And if you have an elite running quarterback, it can work, right? Tim Tebow, Taysom Hill. The problem is those guys are – how many of them are there?
Are generational type players.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because they're such a weird phenomenon.
Well, because they're physical beasts, right? Tebow and Hill could run over people, right? They were not running quarterbacks, quote unquote, right? They were running backs who happened to play quarterback. So it's a different deal. But man, I saw it every week. I watch college football, and they get in the red zone and they throw in the backup quarterback who's a runner, and I'm like, this is so stupid. Why are you doing this, right? Like, this is not an elite runner you just put in there, right? So you just took, as you like to point out, you've just taken all the rhythm out of your offense and just deflated it. So be ready for that, and that'll put you in a frothy fit.
Oh my gosh!
I don't want
to think about it.
That and,
now you got me all fired up that they're going to do that.
Now, that I'm and a couple of jet sweeps will get you all frothied.
Barf.
So anyway, I hope you're right, and I hope it's Romney, and I hope they just stick with him and let him rip and let it go. So. All right. Well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening to this week's podcast. We'll be back next week to talk about Utah State and, I guess, you know, talk about the next game. But, gosh, we got to win those three next games, right? I don't know that we got to preview those games. They just have to win. So, but anyway, thanks for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!